Before I start, I would like to say that while I'm very pleased to have been invited to speak, some of you may have heard that actually the reason why I was invited to speak, because the person who was supposed to speak today, namely my advisor, whose name is Jean-Louis Colliot-Hélène, was actually not able to come because he hurt his back as he was taking a very intense hike. And those of you who know him well would know that when you take a hike with him, it is usually we who hurt our backs and not him. But unfortunately, this time he did hurt his back, and so he was not able to make it. But with that said, let me turn to the next page and just say that that I would say that the mathematicians who have most affected my way of thinking would be first and foremost my dear advisor. And then, as we're gathered here this week for Spencer Block, and I'll say more about that in just a second, and then John Tate, who's not here, and the last two people are hopefully here because Yakato and then Uwe Janssen. And so I would like to thank them. I think anything reasonable that I have done is I think largely due to their influence, and someone who was supposed to be here but he missed his plane in New York, and that is Alexander Grothendieck. He may be here tomorrow, so I would like to say a few words about Spencer Block, and I think that the following sort of like pretentious metaphor might be I think accurate. And that is, Block is like someone who shows us the way through a dark forest, and he has a very bright flashlight, and we follow along behind him, and I think everything seems clear. And then after a couple of years, he decides, well, I've seen enough of this part of the forest. I think I'm gonna go see another part, and so I'll see you guys later. And you think you see the forest very well, and then Spencer leaves. And then you realize that your flashlight is not quite as bright as his, or at least I will speak for myself. And then he leaves, and you turn on your flashlight, and then you either get lost, or maybe you run into a tree, or something. So I think that if that doesn't sound too pretentious, that is I think a good way to, at least for me, to describe the influence of Spencer Block. And so if there's a motto for this talk, it is just do it, and you should do it actually multiplicatively. And I even wrote, I'm going to be sued, I think, by Nike, a swoosh with a GM here. Okay, so that's so please do not tell Philip Knight that, or else I'm going to be in big trouble. Okay, so now to the actual talk. Okay, so And I think this talk, for those of you who may have heard my talk last year in Banff or last summer at the Hodge Theory in beautiful Venice, this talk is going to be kind of a smash product of those two talks. So for those of you who were in, I guess, Venice, you are invited to sleep if you must through the first maybe 20 minutes. Those of you who were in Banff may sleep through the last 20 minutes. As you all know well, that if you have an elliptic curve over the complex numbers, then you can write, and I even have a pointer, I promise not to point it at you. So you can write, it's a rather dull pointer, I think that's my flashlight going through the forest. So, sorry? Anyway, so you can write the group of complex points as the complex numbers modulo a lattice lambda, and you can write lambda in the form z plus z tau, where tau is in the upper half plane, and if you set q is e to the 2 pi I tau, then you can also write the points as c star modulo q to the z. And in 1959, which is the year that I was born, Tate showed that you can make sense of this multiplicative description, hence the motto of the talk, in a general complete valued field if Q is of absolute value less than one. And such elliptic curves are now, I mean, in over a complete over a general complete value field are called Tate elliptic curves. And if K is non-Archimedean, then they have split multiplicative reduction modulo the maximal ideal of the valuation ring. So if I take L to be a prime number, and if E square bracket L to the N is the group of points of order L to the N on E over an algebraic closure of K, and if then I denote as usual by TL the so-called Tate module, which is the inverse limit of E square bracket L to the N, then we have an exact sequence that goes 0 goes to ZL of 1, goes to TL, goes to ZL, goes to 0, and that holds for in fact any L, even L equals P, which is the residue characteristic of our field K. And so the class of this extension in the group X1 as a Galois module of ZL by ZL of 1 is just the class of Q in the completion of K star with respect to its subgroups K star L to the N. And the Galois module of the Galois module structure of such extensions is reasonably simple, but is still extremely interesting. And this has been studied. There have been generalizations by people like Mumford and also by Reynaud. This was generalized to some higher dimensional abelian varieties with a totally multiplicative reduction, and then certain curves which are now called Mumford curves of higher genus, and then somewhat later Manin and Drinfeld gave what they called a morphism from these two famous papers by Mumford, so that if you have a Mumford curve and you take its Jacobian, you have the Abel-Jacobi map, and they gave an analytic definition of that. Please recall that the important ingredient in the p-adic uniformization of an abelian variety are two isogenous lattices of periods that we'll call lambda and lambda prime, and a non-degenerate pairing in a suitable sense from lambda across the dual of lambda prime into K star, and then this pairing will give a uniformization of the abelian variety in the following way. If I can turn the page, and that is that you can express A as Hom of lambda prime, say dual GM modulo lambda as actually rigid analytic varieties. Okay, so if I now take K to be a finite extension of QP, and in fact most of what I'll say holds over a complete discretely valued field with a perfect residue field of positive characteristic, but there'll be one crucial point later where, at least to prove what we prove, we need to assume that K is a finite extension of QP, and if anyone here has some suggestions for how to remove that, I would be very grateful. Let's just stick to that case so that I don't have to keep saying that. And I of X is a smooth projective geometrically connected variety over K, and I will use the usual notations. And so K bar is an algebraic closure of K, and X bar is obtained by extending scalars to K bar. And so in this talk, meaning my co-author, whose full name is Francesc Xavier Charles Ribas, and his nom de guerre is just Xavier Charles, that some people know him as XX. We find sort of a purely algebra geometric way to reinterpret these lattices, and in fact to generalize them to higher index cohomology. And the sort of key tool we use is the comparison theorem between p-adic a tau cohomology and log crystalline cohomology, And what I mean by that is the proof by Tsuji of the so-called semi-stable conjecture, CST. So I think I'll skip the rest of the slides. I would just like to assure you that I'm not going to actually show 53 slides. The thing that I would like to quickly do, because I think many of you have heard this, and those of you who have can now fall asleep, is that we tried to formalize the idea of a variety with totally degenerate reduction. And this was well known for curves and in certain cases in higher dimension, but when we first started doing this work, we found that we could not find a precise definition of what it meant to have totally degenerate reduction, and we found that actually providing such was not that trivial. And so I will do that in just a moment. But what the definition will imply?
I think the wireless microphone is interacting with my BlackBerry. You see, I am really wired here.
But what these varieties are going to do for us is that they're a tau cohomology for all primes L, including the residue characteristic P. That the a tau cohomology over X bar is going to be after passing to a finite unramified extension, a successive extension of direct sums of Galois modules of the form QL of R. And so the main thing that I want to talk about today is to take the case of odd a tau cohomology, and we are going to associate that a p-adic analytic torus, ji of x, that is going to be slightly different from the complex one, and I will say more about that in just a moment. And you can already see the difference in the sense that the dimension of rji is going to be the Hodge number hi, I minus 1, which is in general smaller than the complex intermediate Jacobian whose dimension is one half of the 2i minus the first Betti number, which of course is in general bigger than hi, I minus 1. And then we're going to define an Abel-Jacobi map from the Chow group of I cycles on X, which are homologically equivalent to zero. And ideally, we would go into the intermediate, the K points of the intermediate Jacobian, the thing we will call the quote, p-adic intermediate Jacobian. But in order to define the Abel-Jacobi map, we, for the moment, have to tensor with Q. And I will explain more why that is in just a moment. We don't believe that should be necessary, but to make correct statements, at least ones that we can claim to prove, we do have to do that for the moment. And J1 is going to be Picard variety, pick 0, and JD is going to be the Albanese variety, ALB, where D is the dimension of X. And as I said, that we call the JI of X, we call them p-adic intermediate Jacobians, and we expect them to provide a useful first step in the study of algebraic cycles on such a variety. Now, I would like to stop there by saying that the theory, is a bit ahead of the applications, in the sense that when we first started out working on this stuff, we were hoping to actually get some applications. We have not got as far with that as we had hoped. But we hope that these tools might be useful to others to actually make some good applications. We were hoping that this is going to be in a similar way as the intermediate Jacobians that were defined by Griffiths in the late 60s. And by the way, just let me quickly turn to the end so that when I make some references, so we have, I mean, there are of course many more references than this, but when I referred to GR, it is this famous paper by Griffiths that was in the Annals of Math where he defines his version of the intermediate Jacobians, and then there are two papers by myself and Chatalis, and then there are two papers that I have by myself, one of which has been published, the other of which is still in preparation, and then I will be referring to a famous paper by Ma'anin from 1991 in a few minutes, but I just wanted to get that to you before so that you know what I was referring to. So let me go back.
In the special case for the Griffiths
Yes, so in the case where it is an abelian variety, we would expect them to, if you will, be the same. I mean, of course, that they are not comparable because they live in different worlds. But we would then expect ours to be something that, if you define them both over finitely generated fields, then you would be able, in some sense, to compare them. Yes, thank you. But if you recall what the intermediate Jacobians of Griffiths are, they are, so I am going to denote them, I'm going to denote the complex ones by J-I tilde, so that you can differentiate them from our J-I, and that J-I of X is a compact complex torus, not necessarily an abelian variety, whose dimension is, as I just mentioned, one half of B2I minus 1, and as I think many of you know, that these were used by Griffiths to with the Abel-Jacobi map to detect codimension 2 cycles that are homologically equivalent to 0 but not algebraically equivalent to 0, and that is an extremely famous result that was proved using these things. The quote advantage of our JI is that it is defined over our field K, which you'll recall is a finite extension of QP. And it therefore has some arithmetic meaning. So like for a example, you can take this torus and you can reduce it mod p. And in fact, we hope that one way to use it to detect non-trivial cycles is to reduce it mod p and to use the group of connected components to show that something specializes non-trivially to the group of connected components, and therefore it was non-trivial to begin with. But we have not managed to actually do that in a concrete case yet. Okay. Whereas actually the Griffiths intermediate Jacobians are in general have no algebraic meaning because they are defined over C. They are not defined at least a priori in an algebraic way. And in the case where they are not, where they don't turn out to be abelian varieties, there is no known way to actually realize them in some kind of an algebraic way. So a dream of mine, which I'll discuss in just a second, is to go back to the complex theory and to use a sort of similar technique as you will see below to sort of redefine the intermediate Jacobians, keeping the motto in mind to do it multiplicatively, and that we hope that if you could do that, which is not going to be easy, that you would be able to gain some insight which we may not have right now. I will try to say more about that later when I get to an analog of the generalized Hodge conjecture. So, of course, a big disadvantage of ours is that because the dimension of our JI is HI comma I minus 1, which is in general smaller than B2I minus 1 divided by 2, that they by themselves are not going to capture everything that the complex intermediate Jacobians do. And so to help compensate for this, we can actually relate the if you will, missing pieces to higher odd, I mean, and I should really say continuous higher odd algebraic K theory, which we're not able to do in the complex case. And in fact, if you could reinterpret the complex intermediate Jacobians in this multiplicative way, then I would have some hope that you might be able to relate some of the pieces of them to higher algebraic K theory, to higher odd algebraic K theory, and that remains to be seen. But the idea in the complex case, this vague I idea that has not really been made precise in general, is the idea that actually many, or perhaps even all, complex varieties should have this sort of totally degenerate semi-stable reduction in the same way as the varieties that we study over complete discretely valued fields. And this aforementioned paper by Manin shows what this might mean for curves. But I have yet to see any attempt at a general definition. I think that one can sort of bootstrap with Manin's theory to consider, for example, things like products of curves and maybe a billion varieties over C. Okay, so perhaps I will move right along here because I have 43 slides to go. Okay, so as I was threatening before that we are going to consider a special case of what I call the Hodge-Tate conjecture below. Now, if we go back to the complex case, we know how to produce some extensions of mixed Hodge structure of Z by Z of 1 in a similar way as we get extensions of ZL by ZL of R in the non-Archimedean case. So for example, if you take an abelian variety over C, and you take the corresponding one motive as defined by Deligne, and then you can play with basically the exponential sequence, and from this abelian variety you can come up with an extension of Z's by Z of ones. Okay, and the thing I don't know how to do, which perhaps some of you know, is how to produce such extensions of say Z by Z of R starting from a smooth projective complex variety, because what is lacking, at least trying to do it by these means, in sort of higher, you know, for Z of R, for R greater than 1, is some kind of like exponential sequence. And so my hope is that by using this idea of that at least many complex varieties should have totally degenerate semi-stable reduction, that you might be able to in some sense get around the lack of the exponential sequence and produce these kinds of extensions anyway, but that again remains to be seen. Okay, so and that is more or less the content of what I said here. So in the non-Archimedean case, as we will see in just one or two slides, that these varieties with totally degenerate reduction then produce a lot of extensions of ZLs by ZL of Rs for various R greater than or equal to zero. That's actually a misprint. I mean, there are some R that are actually less than zero. And so, as I just said, one question is how to produce these in the Archimedean case. So let me quickly recall how we define totally degenerate reduction. So I'm here. I will take a more general case. So K is a complete discretely valued field with perfect residue field of positive characteristic. And for example, K could be a finite extension of QP. And I take X to be smooth projective variety over K. And I assume that X has a regular, proper, strictly semi-stable model, script X over the ring of integers R of K. And I let Y bar be the geometric special fiber. And then we will say grosso modo that X has totally degenerate reduction if the geometric irreducible components Y bar I of the special fiber and their various intersections Y bar capital I, which is the intersection of some number of components, if they are cohomologically simple, which means roughly that the Chow groups of each of these Y bar capital I's are finitely generated abelian groups, and the cycle map is an isomorphism on rational, and depending on whether you're taking L-adic or crystalline cohomology. In fact, I think the crystalline statement implies the L-adic statement, but that we have a version of the Hodge index theorem for the Chow groups themselves, and not just for the cohomology. And the odd rational cohomology should be trivial. So what that condition does immediately is that it severely restricts what the components and their intersections can be. Okay, so they can be, for example, something like projective spaces, Grassmannians, things like that. But the thing that we were trying to do is to sort of abstract, though, and to try to actually minimize the conditions we need so as to possibly include more cases than those which may be known at present. And the key condition that we really need is that the special fiber Y is ordinary in the sense that was defined if you want to define this precisely, then you need the logarithmic Durand-Witt complex. But one condition that implies this is if the components of the special fiber, which are assumed to be smooth, are actually ordinary themselves. Okay? And so with that definition, we proved, and we really had to use all of these things, that in fact, if you have something with what we, you know, call it with that, that satisfies these conditions, then in fact, the a Tau cohomology for all L, including L equals the residue characteristic, has a filtration which we call the monodromy filtration, and which agrees with the classical L-adic monodromy filtration and gives a good P-adic monodromy filtration. And we know that, actually, Janssen proved about 20 years ago that, in general, we cannot expect there to be a good, that for general varieties, we cannot expect that there to be a good P-adic monodromy filtration. But for these types, there, in fact, will be, and it behaves very well. And it behaves very much like the L-adic monodromy filtration. And the graded pieces have this kind of what you might call like a twisted integral structure. So these TIJs are finitely generated abelian groups, and in fact they are going to give us the lattices that we're going to need later to define our intermediate Jacobians. And if you tension them with QL of minus J, then you get the minus ith graded piece for this filtration of HI plus 2J of X bar with values in QL. Okay, and for those of you who have played with this stuff before, and I think there are actually many of you here, you'll know that the indexing can be a nightmare, and you can sort of pick where your nightmare is going to occur, but it is going to occur somewhere, and depending on how you normalize things and how you choose the indexing, you can have your nightmare now, or you can have it somewhat later, but it will occur. So as I said, that when L is not equal to P, then this coincides with the classical L-adic monodromy filtration on HI X bar QL, which I think I won't go over because I don't have time, I'm afraid. But and the TIJs come from what we call the Chow complex, which is formed from the Chow groups of the Y bar I, which are assumed to be finitely generated abelian groups. And we sort of make a complex which sort of mirrors the terms in the E1 terms in the spectral sequence that I think some of you may know who have dealt with this stuff that one sees in Hodge theory and for L-adic homology in this famous paper by Rappaport and Fink. Okay. And the dimension of TIJ is just the Hodge number HI plus J. Okay, so for examples of varieties with totally degenerate reduction, as I said before, that if you take an abelian variety with totally toric reduction, Mumford curves, and so-called Drinfeld modular varieties, which I won't go over here, but I think many of you know what they mean. And the thing that I would just like to say for those of you in the know is that when L is not equal to P, that this theorem was more or less known. It's not explicitly stated in the aforementioned paper by Rappaport and Fink, but it can easily be extracted from there. So we are not saying that much new when L is not equal to P. But as far as I know, that when L equals P, that I had not seen this in this general form. So okay. So now I would like to explain how we're going to define the intermediate Jacobian. So what do we need to do? Okay, the sort of basic idea is to take an odd cohomology group and then to use this aforementioned monodromy filtration to sort of extract a big extension of ZLs by ZL of 1s for all L, and then to use the lattice structure that we get from these TIJs to then be able to define a P-adic analytic torus. Okay, so how do we do that? Okay, so we are just going to assume for simplicity that the absolute Galois group of K acts trivially on all of the Tij. Of course, that occurs over a finite unramified extension, but it will just make it will make things much simpler for me to explain here. Okay, so now if we're dealing with, I guess it's H2J minus 1, and again, the indices get a little bit unpleasant. And so the relevant lattices are going to be T minus 1J, modulo torsion, and T1, J minus 1. And we are going to define a pairing of lambda cross lambda prime dual into K-star that we need in order to get this p-adic analytic torus. And the way we do it is a very well-known way, and that is that we pick an alpha and a beta in these two groups respectively, and we're going to take this big extension that we extract from the monodromy filtration, and we're going to, in effect, pull it back by the alpha, and we're going to push it out by the beta. Okay, so here's this big extension, and I kind of fudge this a little bit in the sense that there are some delicate things with the torsion. I mean, we certainly have, it's no problem to produce this extension when you take QL, but if you want to take things with ZL coefficients, which of course we have to do, if we want a real p-adic analytic torus and not just one effectively up to isogeny. Okay, so we then get this big extension, and we'll call the middle term EL, and then that requires that we sort of fudge with some normalizing factors that are going to be equal to 1 for almost all L. But I think that I will spare you that here because it would take me the rest of the lecture. So as I just said, that we sort of pull back by the alpha, which is in the lambda. We push it out by the beta, which is in the lambda prime dual. And then we then produce an element of this X1G ZL, ZL of 1, which is just, which is K-star completed with respect to its subgroups K-star to the L to the N. And we are going to denote this by curly bracket alpha beta L, and then we take the product over all L we are going to call that alpha beta, and this a priori takes values in the completion that we take the inverse limit of K star modulo K star to the N, and here's where we need, at least for the proof we give, to be over a finite extension of QP, because we really want this to land in K star, and we can prove that basically because the ring of integers in a p-adic field is complete with respect to its subgroups. So if we call the ring of integers R, then R star is complete with respect to the subgroups R star to the N. And of course, if we took a larger complete discretely valued field, something like CP, that would not be the case. And so there should be some way. So I think I'll skip this proof here, but I just want to say that it is crucial to prove that actually the image of this pairing is contained in K star and not just a priori in K star hat. And so if you want to do this over a bigger field, and I would just say something vague here, and perhaps some of you can have something more in intelligent to say about this, but if you wanted to do this over CP, which would be very nice if we could do that, then it would be nice to be able to have some extension group, which would then give you CP star. And so what I'm saying basically is that trying to do Coomer theory over CP is not going to do us much good. And of course, if you take extensions of CP by CP of one in the category of continuous K bar over K A modules, we know that those are trivial. So that's not going to do us much good. So I think that what would help, although it may not be absolutely necessary, is to have some kind of a category in which X1 of Z by Z of 1 would be CP star. And perhaps some of you know of such a category, but I don't. And I wish I did. So now I would like to explain how to define the Alba-Jacobi mapping. And here, I think also that this is not as polished as we would hope it might be. So we have defined in this way. So the thing that I should have said better is that once we have this non-degenerate pairing, which we have just defined, then we then get the p-adic analytic torus in the same way as you do over the complex numbers. Namely, you take HOM of lambda prime dual into GM, and then you go modulo lambda, and then that will give you, because of the non-degeneracy, that'll give you a perfectly good p-adic analytic torus. Okay, so now we would like to define the Alber-Jacobi mapping, and as I said before, that we're only going to be able to define it, unfortunately, into JJ, and I should really say JAJ of X of K, but I hope you'll excuse that abusive notation. We are going to have to tensor with Q, and I will explain why that is in just a moment. So to do that, we use a lot of Oblak-Kato and the groups H1G. Okay, so we take the cycles homologically equivalent to zero. We take TL, which is the tape module of our p-adic intermediate Jacobian. We take T, which is the total tape module, so to speak, and then with the corresponding notation, I think most of you don't need to recall what is H1G, but for those who do, it is just this kernel here, where Bijram is this ring of p-adic periods, which was defined almost 20 years ago by Fontaine. And for L not equal to P, we have that H1G with values in VL is just the whole thing. But of course, when L equals P, it's much more subtle. So the thing we use, which is actually proved in the paper by Block and Kato, is that in fact the K points of this JJ is just H1G KT. Okay, so the proof basically is the same as their proof for an abelian variety. Okay, I mean, in fact the same proof works for any p-adic analytic torus. And then using a result by Fossings, and I think others have proved this, and excuse me if I did not mention their names, I think in an audience like this I should have, so you can beat me up later. But what we show is that, in fact, the L-adic Alber-Jacobi map, in fact, factorizes through H1G with values in M1, where M1 is the sort of filtrant in this monodromy filtration that we have on H2J minus 1 X bar QL of J, okay, and including L equals P. And the reason why it does is that if we look at VL, which is the whole thing, which is the tape module, modulo this M1, that it's the successive extensions of QL vector spaces of the form, of sums of things of the form QL of I, where I is less than zero. And one knows, and this is proved in the Block-Kato paper, that H1G with values in QL of I is zero for I less than zero. Okay? But the problem is that G with values in ZL of I, which by its very definition contains the torsion, that will in general not be zero. And so that's what we have to fight with, and that's why we had to tensor with Q, so that we can kill that part. Okay? Now there are some ways around this, but none of them are that perfect, and I'd be very grateful if any of you who are much more in intelligent than I, or in the metaphor before with brighter flashlights, I think especially than this one, that perhaps you would have some idea how to do that. So once we do that, then we can define the Alber-Jacobi mapping by first going to H1GKM1, which we've shown that the sort of usual Alber-Jacobi mapping, what is sometimes called the L-adic Alber-Jacobi mapping, in fact factorizes through that. That's what we just showed. And then we can go to M1 modulo M minus 3, which is, if we go to H1G of that, that is just JJ of X. In fact, M1 modulo M minus 3 is just the tape module of JJ of X. Okay? And these things from 11 and Corley 14 actually refer to the paper. By the way, papers... one of them is hopefully it's under submission and is going to appear soon. And the p-adic intermediate Jacobi Piatic intermediate Jacobian paper is should be appearing in the transactions of the AMS, I hope very soon. Okay, so that's how we define the Abel-Jacobi mapping, and you can see why it is we needed to tensor with Q. So as I said before, and this just kind of repeats some things, so I will say this very quickly, that J1 is the Jacobian, JD is the Albanese, and this remark 2-1 just explains why we need to tensor with Q. And one thing that we can do is that we can sort of, that we can finesse this by sort of that we can define the Abel-Jacobi mapping on sort of a subgroup, if you will, of finite index of the Chow group, but it's not clear how to do this. So if we change the base field, this sort of torsion problem could conceivably grow in a way that at least I don't know how to control. So I think that is not very satisfactory. And I think it's better off to just, you know, to just take the pain and then just tensor with Q, kill the torsion, and then just move on, and then hopefully someday be able to come back and to do it better. And as I said before, that the dimension of our JJ is just the Hodge number HJ, J minus 1, which is in general less than B to J minus 1 divided by 2. And in fact, in the most interesting cases, will be strictly less than. And so at first we said, oh no, you know, we failed, we have not done this correctly. But when you really think about it, I think this is extremely reasonable in the sense that if you really want to have a Piatic analytic torus, and if you look and you stare at a Piatic analytic torus, you look it straight in the eye, and you look at its torsion, then its torsion is going to have to be an extension of ZLs by ZL of 1s. Okay? But of course, in general, if you look at this monodromy filtration on H2J minus 1 X bar QL, you will see that H2J minus 1 X bar QL itself is more than just an extension of ZLs by ZL of 1s. So if you really want to have a, so to speak, physical torus, then you must be willing to live with this. It's not just that we have a dim flashlight. Okay, so, fact, and I will not get into this too much, but in some cases, you can, quote, recover the rest of the classical intermediate Jacobian. Like, for example, if I take J equals 2, and if we play with this exact sequence, and if you get the indices right, then if you look at, if we denote by alpha 2 our Abel-Jacobi map, then you get a map from the kernel of this map into H1K with values in M minus 3. And if you run through the monodromy filtration, you see that M minus 3 is modulo torsion, is a direct sum of ZL of 2s. Okay? And when you see ZL of 2, and if you know some K theory, then you think about, in decomposable K3. Okay? And as was proved by people like Levine and by Merkuryev and Suslin, and then generalized in fact to all, so H1K ZL of R is just the sort of continuous K2R minus 1, which was proved in a beautiful paper by Hesselholt and Madsen that appeared maybe 4 years ago. Okay? So that sort of gives you a very tantalizing thing that you can relate, I mean, that you should be able to relate, although you can definitely relate the kernel of alpha 2 to continuous K3, but it remains to be seen whether you can do it to K3 itself, because we, as far as I know, we still don't know, for example, for a Piatic field, the relationship between the real K3, I mean, and the continuous K3, right? They are supposed to be sort of approximately the same, at least for K3. If I understand correctly, but perhaps Bruno can contradict me on that one. But it's not easy. Okay, thank you. Okay, good. It's not easy. So so then we would hope that we could relate the kernel of the higher, I mean, of like alpha J, successively to higher odd continuous algebraic K groups. And again, a dream is that you could do this in the complex case as well. It's going to be somewhat different, but I think that it suggests that in the complex case that you can sort of view the Griffith's Intermediate Jacobian as consisting of some pieces, each of which may not be tori themselves, but that there is a, and I don't want to be so pretentious as to say a filtration, but there's a way of, if you will, kind of like breaking up that, and so that one piece would be something of dimension, the Hodge number HJ, J minus one, and then you would have, so to speak, some other pieces, and I know that that is not very precise, but at least to me that is quite an exciting thing to think about, perhaps if I you can get some new batteries for my flashlight, then I can perhaps make some progress on that. So the thing I'd like to do with the rest of my time is to and with my 28 slides that I'm going to do in 15 minutes, right? That I'm going to discuss an example that, in fact, that we sort of played with and helped show us the way to what it is we should have been doing, and it's going to eventually be the product of three Tate curves, but we are going to warm up by taking two Tate curves because actually two Tate curves is extremely interesting by itself. Are you ready? Okay, let's go. Okay, so let's take two Tate curves. Okay, Tate elliptic curves. Okay, let's call them E1 and E2. And we can write them in the form EI is GM modulo QI to the Z, where QI in KSAR is the so-called Tate parameter, and its absolute value is less than 1. And we're going to describe some results that are due to Serre and to Tate, but we are going to describe them in a somewhat different way, which lends them to generalization. And I won't bore you with all of these monodromy calculations, but let me just quickly say that if I take V is H1 of E1 bar QP of 1, and if I take W is H1 E2 bar QP, and the reason why I don't put QP of 1 is that I want the tensor product to be a part of H2X bar QP of 1 and not QP of 2. Okay, so I just want to get the right twists here. And so if you sort of do compute the monodromy filtration, then you easily come out, and again, I won't bore you with this, and in fact, let me just skip to the next slide, and let me sort of skip to the chase, so to speak. So what you eventually find is that if you do the monodromy filtration on H2 of the product of these two curves, call that product X, and if you get your indices right, then you have this map from M0 modulo M minus 2 to H1 of, so if I have a finite extension of K, say L, with absolute Galois group H, and if you run the monodromy, then you get a map that looks like this, M0 modulo M minus 2 to H1 of this absolute Galois group H with I and QP of 1. And what is this map? I'm glad you asked that. And the answer is that it would send the, so I should have said better, excuse me, that M0 modulo M minus 2 is just two copies of QP with trivial Galois action, okay? And the map, if you choose a basis, would send A1 comma A2 to the class of Q1 to the A1, Q2 to the A2 in this group K star completed with respect to its subgroups K star to the P to the N, and then tensored by over ZP with QP, okay? And so then M0 fixed by H is not going to be zero if and only if there are non-zero p-adic numbers A1 and A2 that give a relation between the Qs, okay? And what seems like a miracle, but it's actually not that hard to prove, is that if you have two p-adic numbers Q1 and Q2 whose valuations are not zero, then in fact there will be such a relation with p-adic integer A1 and A2, just in case there is one with rational integer A1 and A2. Okay, so, and when you first see that seems like an absolute miracle, because that's not true when you take more than two Qs. Okay, so as we'll see later, if you take three Qs, there is going to be a big difference in general between relations with rational integer coefficients and with p-adic integer coefficients, and my sort of what I call the generalized p-adic Hodge-Tate conjecture says that this explains the two Kony-Vo filtrations, that one of which is a sort of classical Kony-Vo filtration, the other of which you get by taking the Kony-Vo filtration with finite coefficients, Z mod P to the N coefficients, taking the inverse limit, and then tensoring with QP, as Bloch and Aynot showed in their famous 1996 paper, that those two, and as was known, but they showed much more clearly that those filtrations will in general be different, okay? And part of this theory gives in a sense a conjectural explanation of why they should be different in the case where you are dealing with varieties with totally degenerate reduction. So briefly, the classical filtration should correspond to relations where the A1 and A2 are rational integers, and the sort of inverse limit Kony-Vo filtration, if you will, should correspond to relations where the A1 and A2 are p-adic integers. And those relations will in general be much different. But in the case of two Qs, as is shown by Serre in his abelian L-adic representations and elliptic curves book, they are the same. Okay? And so what Serre showed is that E1 and E2 are isogenous. Okay, so these two Tate elliptic curves, just in case there exist non-zero rational integers, A1 and A2, such as Q1 to the A1, Q2 to the A2, is equal to 1. And in fact, the map, HOM E1, E2, tensor with QP, to HOM as a Galois module, of VP of E1, VP of E2, and in fact, this would be true on the ZP level, is actually bijective. And that is really the key point in Serre's proof, long before Faltings proved the Mordell conjecture and the Tate conjecture for abelian varieties. Serre had proved in the late 60s that if you have two elliptic curves, one of whose J invariance is not an algebraic integer, then he proved sort of global version of this statement. And when you look at Serre's proof, you see that what he really proves, and where you use that the J invariant is not an algebraic integer, is to reduce to the case where one of the curves, and in fact both of them, or else is trivial, are actually Tate elliptic curves over some QP. And so I sort of saw this statement, and in the context of what I had been doing in my work with Chodilis, and I said to myself, I think a much more general statement should be true, and that's what I call the p-adic generalized Hodge-Tate conjecture. And I will invite all of you to say that three times fast. So I just hope to, in my last couple minutes, give you a sense of what that's going to be. But if we sort of take into account the other contributions to H2X bar QP of 1, where X, again, is a product of two Tate elliptic curves, then it says that the map from PICX tensor QP to H2X bar QP of 1 fixed by Galois is surjective. Okay, so this looks like the Tate conjecture, but you say to yourself, hey, but wait a minute, this is not a field that is finitely generated over the prime field. And you're right about that, okay? But the idea is that these varieties have such, if you will, this is going to sound like a bad pun, and I guess it is, but they have such like a rigid structure because of the totally degenerate reduction that we can hope and dare I say expect that a Tate conjecture type of statement will be true for these types of algebraic varieties, whereas it is most definitely not true, for example, if you take varieties with good reduction, there's no way that a Tate conjecture type of statement can be true. Okay, so only 23 slides to go in 6 minutes. We can do it. So this last statement is what I call, in this particular case, the p-adic Tate conjecture. Okay, so now that we are warmed up with two Tate elliptic curves, we're doing great. Let's do three. Okay, and three, then you start getting some much more interesting things, even though two, I hope you'll agree, was interesting enough. Okay, so if we do three curves, EI, I equals 1, 2, 3, with their Tate parameters QI, then you find that the dimension of the H3 is 20, So the complex intermediate Jacobian will be of dimension 10. Ours will be of dimension 9 because the Hodge number H12 is 9. Okay? So, and as I said before, the sort of lost part of the intermediate Jacobian, a new reality TV series, what happened to the rest of the intermediate Jacobian? Okay? Coming soon to a network near you. Okay? But that, as I said, you can hope to relate to K3. Okay, so I won't bore you with these monodromy calculations. But let me just say, as I was saying before, that the PK vector space of our J2 is going to be of dimension 18. And that, as I said before, that this lost, that the lost part can be related to the sort of continuous K3 in decomposable, which in this case is the continuous K3, because the continuous nonal part disappears. So in some cases we can determine, or more generally we can conjecture what is the image of the restriction of the Alba Jacobi map to the codimension 2 cycles that are algebraically equivalent to zero, and this is going to be an abelian variety, and in fact one knows that there is a sort of universal abelian variety representative, which was proved by somebody here sitting right over there, Professor Murr, in 1983. And what our theory does is that it gives at least conjecturally a nice interpretation of how you can get at that variety in a quite different way than you do in the complex case. And again, it would be useful to go back to the complex case and see if you can think about things in this way. Okay, so how can we do that? So if you look at the period pairing that allowed us to define the p-adic intermediate Jacobian, that one can view the period pairing, and let me just write this down quickly. So we had lambda cross lambda prime dual into K star. And of course, we can also view that as a map lambda into HOM lambda prime dual into K star. Okay, and in fact, so the non-degeneracy of the period pairing says effectively that map is injective. Okay, but that map right here is part of, I think the people on the left can't see that. So it is lambda to HOM of lambda prime dual K star. So that's how we could define the p-adic analytic torus. But maps like these are part of a much more general theory that I call enriched monodromy operators. Okay, so they are, and the reason why I call them enriched is because if you compose with the valuation, okay, so if you were to compose this map, which you people on the left still can't see, with HOM lambda prime dual into Z by the valuation, of course, this is simply... Sorry?
Couldn't you write that a bit lower?
Okay. Okay, well taken. This, of course, is just lambda prime dual. I mean, is just lambda prime. Okay, so... And the map lambda to lambda prime, in fact, it's just kind of an integral version of the monodromy operator to a power on the graded quotient for the monodromy filtration. And that's something you can do much more generally. So I will just kind of skip to the chase because my time is just about over. But if you look at this extension that you would get, so I mean again, we have an X. We are dealing with the H3. You get an extension that looks like this. And if you play with this, then you get a map that I call N1, which is what I call the enriched monodromy operator, from T11, and I need to tensor with Q, to HOM of T03 dual into K star tensor Q. Okay? And briefly, because I'm just about out of time, what the generalized Hodge-Tate conjecture says for H3 is that the sort of largest abelian variety, that is contained in the intermediate Jacobian together with a regular map from the Chow group of cycles that are algebraically equivalent to zero, can be interpreted that you could get the lattice that you would need to define that abelian variety is going to be given by the kernel of this map. Okay, and that is something that I have never seen in the complex case, because I don't even know how to define these groups in the complex case. And again, I dream that by using the kind of analog of totally degenerate reduction, which we don't have in general, that we would be able to define these groups Tij in the complex case and to express these results and conjectures in that form. So that is effectively the generalized Hodge conjecture for H3. I think maybe that is a good place for me to stop, and I'd like to thank you for your attention. I have sort of thought about that a bit, but not as much as I would like. Yeah, but I mean, perhaps you could tell me briefly how that would go or what it would say.
Oh, no.
No. Okay. All right. Okay. Then I am not going to buy you lunch then. There were some. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I think that her picture, which I don't understand as well as I would like to, I think her picture would get me part of the way where I'd like to be, but I think not all of the way. But I think that what she's working towards, I think is very similar to what we are working towards. Yes. Oh, sir. Yes, so for curves, there is a fairly good theory, and in fact, actually, any curve, should have totally degenerate reduction. And so basically, and this is something which I will confess that I don't understand so well, and that I would like to, but in this paper by Manin, he constructed sort of like a, quote, regular proper model, which is a three-dimensional real hyperbolic manifold, so it's completely out of the world of algebraic geometry, and so the special fiber is some kind of a tangle of geodesics, and so it's a quite different picture, and it's not clear to me how to do this in higher dimension. Yeah. Yes. So I think Mark is going to buy lunch then. It's quite a different time.
Any more questions? That was a very illuminating and entertaining lecture, Wayne. And I just wanted to point out that, as Wayne said, there's a notational nightmare out there that's inevitable, and I didn't really see it here. So just be careful when you go out to lunch, because it's rumored to be waiting for you on Elm Street, which is about four blocks in that direction. So,
yes.
Anyhow, let's, on that note, thank the speaker again.